Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
By any measure, it's one of the largest payouts in state history, even when adjusted for inflation.
Alaskans would get $3,200 under a budget passed by the legislature. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 19th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Anchorage Police Union prepares to negotiate over a new body camera policy.
It's one thing to say, yep, copy, we've got cameras, we're recording everything, you just can't see it. Well, I don't necessarily think that that meets the goal of what the public had in mind.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska employers, did you know there is a no-cost, no-deductible way to bond at-risk employees, including ex-offenders and individuals recovering from drug addictions, even when your own insurer will not provide bonding? Information about Fidelity Bonding is available at your local Alaska Job Center or toll-free at 877-724-2539. Fidelity Bonding through the Alaska Department of Labor is 100% federally funded. This is an equal opportunity program. This message sponsored by the Department of Labor.
The Alaska legislature passed a budget late last night that includes a $3,200 payout to Alaskans in the form of permanent fund dividends and energy relief payments. That's a compromise after the state Senate had earlier sought $5,500 payments. House members argued that would draw too much from state savings. The budget is still one of the largest in state history, and it's just one piece of legislation that passed in a flurry of activity right at the end of the legislative session. All of it, of course, must still survive Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto pen to become law. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks was up late following the legislature's frantic scramble to pass bills before the deadline. In some cases, he says that meant bills were amended into other bills to get them passed. Brooks compares that to a turducken, a three-bird roast that involves stuffing a chicken into a duck and stuffing that into a turkey.
For example, there was a bill that involved changing signature requirements on vehicle titles. Well, another bill got shoved inside it that requires only one license plate instead of two. So you'll only need your rear license plate instead of a rear and front license plate.
So kind of a mad dash to the finish, and all at the last second it gets shoved together and passed to make it across the finish line. Of course, the biggest thing that we've been watching is the budget, which includes the permanent fund dividend for this year and an energy relief payment. What happened with that? And I guess also, how close did we get to a $5,500 payment this year?
Right. $5,500 seemed like it was a possibility as late as Saturday. But on that day, the House turned down the Senate proposal that contained the $5,500. That left the House with one version of the budget, the Senate with another version of the budget, and that forced them to negotiate a compromise. What that compromise group came up with was $3,850, a $2,600 PFD, and about a $1,200 energy rebate. But that's not what ended up happening, because that compromise was dependent on some of the energy relief money getting paid out of savings. And the House fell one vote short of spending from savings in order to pay for that. So the end result is about $3,200. By any measure, it's one of the largest payouts in state history, even when adjusted for inflation. But for a lot of legislators, it was a disappointment because it could have been higher and was discussed as being higher.
What was the reasoning, I guess, for the folks that in the House that voted against spending from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, that savings account you mentioned? What did they say about their votes against that?
It's concerns about the future. For the past few years, while oil prices have been low, the state has blazed through almost $16 billion in savings. And so the state savings accounts are at a really low ebb right now. the state's expecting a lot of money from high oil prices and thus high oil taxes caused by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but it's not certain at this point. And so there have been a fair number of legislators who are worried about the idea of spending from savings, and their concern is making sure that there's enough money in savings to cover unforeseen circumstances, even if it comes at the cost of the short-term payout.
Now, for the folks that voted for a higher payout, what was the reasoning there? I mean, that's tied to these high energy prices that we're seeing right now, right?
Exactly. We're starting to see the annual fuel barges arrive in remote villages, and looking at gasoline prices at, say, $16 a gallon. And it's reflected across the state, not just in those villages. Costs of food are going up. Costs of fuel are going up. And legislators really wanted to respond to that. And to some degree, they have, but not as much as other legislators wanted.
Yeah. Well, like we said, it was kind of a mad dash to the finish, and the budget was just one part of that. What else got passed last night by the legislature?
One of the big accomplishments that did pass was a omnibus education bill targeted to making sure that every Alaska student can read by the third grade. The idea is that by spending more effort and money on early education, you improve outcomes for kids later on. Otherwise, there was a pretty significant revision of the state's sexual assault laws now to make it reliant on consent, not just violence or the threat of violence. There's a bill limiting child marriages in the state. Right now, existing law, somebody as young as 14 can get married with the approval of a judge. The bill raises that age to 16 and says that if you're a 16 or 17-year-old, you still need a judge's approval and you can only get married to somebody who's within 3 years of your own age.
There were some things that didn't pass, and I guess one of those was a campaign finance bill. Tell me about that.
Yeah, earlier this year, a federal judge, actually a series of them, ruled that the limits on how much you can donate to a political candidate were illegal and threw them out. The legislature needed to impose new limits if there's going to be any kind of restriction on how much somebody can donate to a candidate. In the last hours of the legislature, that bill failed. So right now, and going into this fall's election, there's no limit on how much money someone can donate to a candidate. Remains to be seen how much effect that will have on this year's election, but I think it will be significant. And connected to that, the governor and Republican legislators, plus some Democrats, wanted to have more security measures in place for elections in the future. That bill also didn't pass. That was one of those turduckens. They were trying to merge campaign finance and election security, but both bills died.
Well, that was James Brooks with the Alaska Beacon. You can read his full story about the budget that passed and the other bills that passed at alaskabeacon.com. James, thanks for being here to help us understand this.
Thanks, Casey.
The Anchorage Police Union says it has now waited more than a month for the city to begin negotiations on the policy to put body cameras on police officers. The Anchorage Police Department completed its final draft of the policy at the end of March, but now the union needs to weigh in. Jeremy Conkling, the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, says he put in a request to the city's Human Resources Department in mid-April, asking for a date to start the negotiations.
I got a reply back on April 18th that the municipality would look into dates and get back to me soon. And I've heard nothing from anyone about negotiations since April 18th.
Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson's administration did not immediately respond to questions today. Police officials say they won't comment on the draft policy until it's finalized and put into practice. Negotiations to finalize the policy would involve the police department, the city, and the union. Voters approved the purchase of the body cameras last April. Conkling says the union is in support of the body cameras overall, but he has some concerns about the draft policy. For one, he says it doesn't allow officers to review footage in some instances, like if someone dies in police custody or if officers use deadly force.
They should be able to review that footage before they have to then go ask questions about it, especially since the person asking them questions will have already seen the video and be able to ask questions about specific conduct on the video that our officers did a day, a week, a month, upwards of a year ago.
While Conkling is focused on officer access to body camera footage, advocates in Anchorage are also concerned that there is no clear pathway for public release of certain footage, like police shootings, beyond making a records request, which can take months. Conkling says there are legal and privacy issues surrounding the release of footage, but he believes there should be a reasonable avenue for the public to be able to review it.
They had a desire to have increased transparency with our department, and I think part of that is the ability for them to review it, right? It's one thing to say, yep, copy, we've got cameras, we're recording everything, you just can't see it. Well, I don't necessarily think that that meets the goal of what the public had in mind when they funded these cameras.
There is still no final date for when cameras will be on Anchorage police officers. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Kodiak students make educational TikTok videos about brown bears.
It's gonna pan into me like getting surprised by a bear, you know? And then at the end, it's very dramatic, very dramatic.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents, did you know that 1 out of 4 Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit livevapefree at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
Juneau's 2 public high schools saw an increase in new COVID-19 cases following their proms. Masks were optional at both events. Juneau Douglas High School Yada Otclay has reported more than 30 cases since its prom May 7th. But Juneau School District Superintendent Bridget Weiss says there's no way to know for sure if that event caused the spike.
There's a lot of end-of-the-year activities. So we had prom on May 7th, but we also had a lot of teams traveling for sports. Right about the same time.
Weiss says there was more of a noticeable spike at JDHS, which could be due to it having a smaller venue. But Thunder Mountain High School's prom was held a week later on May 14th on campus. There have been 9 reported cases at the school since then.
The JDHS cases really came pretty quickly following that prom. Like, we started to see the cases as early as Tuesday. We have not seen the exact same result from the Thunder Mountain prom, although it could happen.
Weiss says the schools are doing their best to make sure students can keep their end-of-the-year traditions, and those events always come with risk. Graduations for both schools are expected to be indoors with masks highly encouraged but not required on May 29th. ...5,000 people are expected to come to Juneau in August for an Ironman race. The city only has 1,000 hotel rooms, so it's encouraging Juneau residents to go on vacation and rent their homes to athletes for the week. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Michael Bissell says he was late to the game and looking for a place to stay in Juneau for the Ironman race. He's coming up from Salt Lake City.
Well, I was looking at hotels for about 2 weeks, and after no luck there, seriously none. I started going on the Facebook page.
The Facebook page for Ironman Alaska has an accommodation thread with over 700 comments. Bissell says his search went pretty quickly once he posted.
And then within 30 minutes, I had 2 people who had messaged me already. And it just took a couple of days to see what was best for me and my crew that was coming out.
Bissell's crew is his mom, his brother, and a friend. They're paying $1,000 a night for 4 nights, and he's still hoping his crew will help him with that. The comments on the Facebook thread started back in October, with people mostly looking for housing in Juneau during the race. In January, there were a lot of discouraged commenters, saying that they were really struggling to find a place to stay. Shortly after, more and more renters began commenting on those comments, offering places. And now, there are more comments offering than there are people looking. But there's a housing shortage in Juneau, and people are already converting their long-term rentals into short-term rentals for the summer, leading some people in the community to question whether Juneau is the right place for an event like an Ironman. Kara Tetley is with Travel Juneau, the city's travel and convention arm. She says that Ironman, the organization, considered a lot of variables before settling on Juneau as its first race location, including hotel capacity.
They came and they visited a couple of times. Different members of the Ironman staff would come in and kind of look at things.
One of the city's solutions to the lack of hotel rooms was to create a program to help residents register their homes as short-term housing. Travel Juneau directs people toward resources to get the business license they need to rent out their home. They're also offering a coupon for a discount on airfare for that week so residents can leave town. Tetley says that the demand for housing during the event seems to have been quelled.
From what we can understand, there was some concern in the beginning just because they kind of wanted to get everything settled right away, but it's really quieted down and it seems like a lot of the athletes are set up or not as concerned about that anymore.
Tetley didn't have information on how many residents have signed up so far, but the city and borough of Juneau finance director Jeff Rogers says he's seen a lot of new registrations for short-term rentals this spring.
I'm not even sure I'd have a good way to know how many of those are people who may just be registering for, the sole purpose of a week for Ironman.
He says the city has 170 businesses registered for short-term rentals, but that doesn't necessarily represent the number of units. And neither Tetley nor Rogers have any way to tell if some of the people who are registering businesses as short-term rentals will continue to rent out their places after the Ironman. It's also still uncertain that everyone coming in town will have a place to stay, though the accommodation thread bodes well for those who are still looking. In the meantime, Bissell will be training and preparing for some of the race obstacles that are more unique to Alaska.
Yeah, I guess I'll be running with some bear spray, I guess.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
The State Department of Environmental Conservation has reaffirmed its decision to grant the proposed Donlin Gold Mine a water quality certificate. The certificate is required for Donlin Gold to conduct its mining operations under the Clean Water Act. The state released its decision last Friday. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
This is the second time the state has reaffirmed its decision to issue the water quality certificate to Donlin Gold. The first time was in 2020. The state initially issued what's called a Certificate of Reasonable Assurance to Donlin in 2018. The certificate says that the state has reasonable assurance that Donlin's operations would comply with state water standards. The Bethel Tribe, ONC, has challenged this certificate multiple times. It's represented by the environmental law firm Earth Justice. The tribe contends that the state cannot have reasonable assurance that the mine won't violate these water quality standards. Specifically, the tribe said that the state cannot guarantee that the mining operations will maintain Alaska's environmental standards for mercury levels, water temperature, and fish habitat. However, the state believes that the mine can maintain these standards. The state has reissued the certificate once in 2019 and reaffirmed it twice in 2020 and 2022 following ONC's challenges. The most recent review by the state and a third-party engineering and consulting firm concluded that the water temperatures are not expected to exceed standards for fish habitat. It determined that the mercury levels in the Crooked Creek watershed could even decrease due to runoff control at the mine. But it did find one area where mercury levels could exceed state water quality standards in a portion of the American Creek watershed due to increased runoff. The finding led Donlin Gold to create a plan for monitoring the mercury levels at the site and adapting its operations as those levels change. ONC issued a statement saying it was disappointed in the state's decision and that the decision, quote, neglects the interest of the peoples of our region, end quote. The tribe expressed concern for the mine's possible environmental impacts. ONC did not say whether it plans to take legal action against the state's decision to reaffirm the water quality certificate. Donlin Gold also issued a statement. It says the project is committed to responsibly developing the mine and that the state's additional review helps ensure that the ecosystem will remain protected. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The special primary election for U.S. Representative is June 11th. Voters will automatically receive a ballot in the mail starting April 27th. No regular polling places will be open on Election Day. You will vote for only one candidate, and you must return your ballot by June 11th with your signature, identifier, and a witness signature. If you will not be at your current mailing address or do not receive a ballot, contact the Division of Elections. You can vote in person at the Division's regional offices beginning May 27th. Offices will be open on weekdays between 8 and 5, on weekends with limited hours, and on Election Day between 7 and 8. For the full schedule and a list of additional in-person voting locations, visit the Division's website at akvoteearly.alaska.gov. For assistance in Alaska Native languages, please call 1-866-954-8683. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
After 6 years on the job, Dina Bishop is stepping down from her role as the Anchorage School District Superintendent. Bishop says throughout the pandemic, recovery from the 2018 earthquake, and other challenges, her focus has always been on students. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas spoke with Bishop this week during one of her final visits to a local school.
Dina Bishop spent Wednesday afternoon at Romig Middle School. She passed out pencils and candy to eighth graders in the cafeteria. It's finals week for the students, and one of Bishop's final weeks as superintendent. Her main piece of advice for her replacement, Jarrett Bryant,
with all the noise in the world right now, put your heart and your mind to young people.
Bishop has faced a lot of noise during her time as superintendent, especially during the last 2 years.
Looking back, it was a difficult time, and some of the really tough things that were like social media, and you know, I'm sad that my friends and family saw mean things. I happened to sit in a position that really has a lot of responsibility and leadership, and that was part of that growth.
She says watching families struggle with remote learning and childcare was difficult. She was also worried about kids' mental health. That's why she fought to bring kids back in person as soon as possible. The school board didn't always agree with Bishop's decisions on health mandates. For example, in December 2021, she told families masks would become optional after winter break. The school board extended the mandate instead.
But I could go to sleep every night, even when I made people upset, knowing that the decision I wasn't making wasn't because of Dina, who's a 52-year-old, but because I know it's going to be better for kids.
She says the student graduation speeches she heard gave her hope.
And they didn't have a woe is me and my life was ruined. They had an outlook of being joyous and having gratitude for what they have. And so that kind of changed my mindset.
Bishop also oversaw the district during the 2018 earthquake, the closure of two schools, and the redesign of King Tech High School. Literacy has been a priority for her throughout, and she plans to continue helping districts improve their reading scores. For her, that means a renewed focus on phonics, or studying the way individual letters and syllables sound. Next, she plans to work with other districts on improving reading outcomes. She says districts in and out of Alaska have reached out to her about consulting opportunities. One thing Bishop feels optimistic about for the Anchorage School District is teacher recruitment. She says the strategy has changed during her time as superintendent. Instead of recruiting teachers from out of state and convincing them to come to Alaska, the district is investing in Grow Your Own programs. They include giving financial support to teachers' aides, secretaries, and Alaska middle college students planning to pursue education careers in the district.
It isn't more money into the system, it's smarter use of the funds that we already have to recruit people.
Over the last 6 years, Bishop has watched school policies and school board member elections become more and more political. As students and staff continue to recover from learning loss during the pandemic, she hopes the district can focus on skills like reading and math.
Our mission is about young people, and they don't get the vote. Like, the kids that we serve don't get the vote. And so whatever I think personally, or wherever any board member sits personally, I think our mission is about children and their outcomes, and that's what we should be talking about.
As she heads into a new chapter, she hopes the Anchorage School District and others in Alaska can keep improving those outcomes. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Kodiak brown bears are a common sight around Kodiak Island. Residents frequently spot them on hiking trails and local beaches. And a new educational program at Kodiak High School is bringing bear awareness into the classroom. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Welcome. How are we doing this morning? I'm glad that you're here.
It's first period, and students shuffle into Sarah Nugent's biology class at Kodiak High School. It's Friday, and there's a special lesson plan.
You have all of in-class time to work on your bear projects. I might end you at the last 5 minutes.
The bear project she's referring to is the capstone assignment for a 6-week unit piloted in Nugent's classroom this semester. It focused solely on Kodiak brown bears, and each week a bear expert presented to the class as part of the program. Guest lecturers included local biologists and wildlife photographers. Jennifer Culbertson sits on the board of the Kodiak Brown Bear Trust, a conservation and research group that helped curate the high school program. She says lessons were aimed towards freshmen and sophomores in high school.
They still have a few years here in Kodiak before they graduate and possibly go to college. The biology classes are sophisticated enough where we could teach bear physiology and some of the finer points of bear behavior and kind of, you know, get a message across.
That message included how to coexist with Kodiak bears, which tend to frequent popular hiking trails and even residential areas during the summer. And it resonated for some students, like Leah, a freshman in Nugent's class. She says biology isn't her favorite subject, but she learned a lot from the way the course was structured.
I prefer English, and after each week, we would have to write a paragraph on it. So that was probably one of my favorite parts of it.
Working on the bear projects also seems to be a hit. Students could either design a sticker or record a TikTok video showcasing what they learned. And there's a lot at stake. Two local sightseeing companies donated bear viewing flights. And students with the most informative projects win seats on the plane. That's motivated some students, like Marcus Rivera and Jonathan Lonzo, both sophomores. They're hard at work on a TikTok.
It's going to be like a short film of me like running through the forest. And then it's going to pan into me, like, getting surprised by a bear, you know? And then at the end, it's very dramatic, very dramatic. A lot of emotion.
Their video, recorded in the hallway, ended up being more of a do's and don'ts guide to bear encounters. Nugent says getting kids excited about science through bears is a win in her book.
Our students are learning and they're growing and they're gaining vital information that may be not reflected in a standardized test score.
Nugent says she plans to incorporate the course into future biology classes. And Culbertson of the Kodiak Brown Bear Trust says the group hopes more teachers pick up the program next year. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early in Anchorage, Bridget Dowd and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, and Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.